chance to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? Oh, great to do another show. We're coming in hot. We're hot off the presses today because if I get this done, I'm going to share with you a podcast that I recorded 2 hours ago. It's true. I did a live one on location at Goodside Pastry, which is a new pastry shop that's opened up in Victoria, and I met with the owners in between them doing some R&D and some prep for another busy weekend to come. And we had the talk. I said, thank you very much. I snapped a few pictures and I got home, plugged in the laptop and started recording this. So you can't get more fresh than that. This is a fresh podcast for you this week. Before that, how are you doing? How's things this week? What's been going on? There's a lot been happening in my world. I got to tell you about some of it before we have our talk. Here we go. Some things that have been happening the last couple of weeks. Last show, I told you about the Bakers for Bakers roundtable that we had about subscription services and subscription orders and that kind of thing. That happened. That was a real thing on January 24th. And it was a lot of fun. It was a really good talk. There were over a dozen of us on the call from all over the U.S. and Canada, and people talking, sharing their ideas, sharing subscription setups that they were running. We talked about payment and ordering software. We talked about what story are we telling if we're running a subscription service versus a walk-up at a brick and mortar. What are some advantages or disadvantages, all of that stuff. And it was a really good chat. Not only was it a good talk, but there was a consensus around the Zoom room that we need to do more of these. So I'm setting up another talk for February. More news on that over at bakersforbakers.org. If you're not a member over there, get a move on, get going. It's a free online community for professional bakers and bakery owners. We share ideas. We share our challenges. We give each other feedback and advice and share our experiences so others can learn. And it's really awesome. And it's done with a lot of kindness and it's done with a lot of care. It's done well. I'm gonna make that claim. So head on over if you haven't been. Bakers for Bakers, that's the digit 4.org. And we'll have another Baker Roundtable coming up in February. And then yesterday, last night, maybe that's why I'm so excited. Last night we had the face-to-face gathering of bakers and bakery owners and industry folk in the Victoria, Vancouver Island, British Columbia kind of area that I was kind of a host and facilitator with. The whole thing was brought forward by the Baking Association of Canada and Martin Barnett, who works and runs the Baking Association. And it was a really cool event. When we first designed this thing and first talked about it, it was like, probably 15 people will show up. We'll have a nice intimate gathering where we'll have some tea, have some baked goods, shoot the breeze, that kind of thing. Yesterday there were over 60 people came and it was a big deal. And we had like tables and table groups and presentations and a live panel discussion. And then we got into table groups and we talked about challenges and priorities and how we can support each other and reported back and everything. And it was really, really good. And we also ate extremely well. Well, everyone else did because people brought their own baking to the thing. And so we had this big table with, you know, Yanni's Donuts brought donuts and Bismarck's and the folks from Shemanis came with the most amazing pretzels. And Leah Hayward, the Scandinavian baker in Sydney, came with one of those, I'm not going to be able to pronounce it, but those beautiful cookie cake wedding celebration offerings that they do in Scandinavia. And it was just delightful and lovely. And there was sourdough bread and there was an apple cake that was to die for, and it was just a platter. So we ate well, we visited, we shared ideas, we got to know each other. People came from as far away as like Kelowna, which is in the interior of BC. It's like it's 2 days to get here from Kelowna, unless you break laws and stuff. So that was pretty impressive. And then personally, it was just awesome because I got to stand up in front of people again and do my thing and tell really bad jokes and try and keep the thing light and moving along. And it was good. It was a lot of fun. People came up afterwards. I'm not making this up. People came up afterwards and said it was a really good event and they were glad they came. So there you go. That's a good thing. I would love to do more of that. I think that would be really cool. I love the face-to-face real bakers in the room conversations as well. So that was a huge load of fun. I haven't circled back with Martin because it was less than 24 hours ago that we had this, but I know his long-range plan was to do more of these across Canada. So hopefully there's something going to be coming up near you in the future that you can attend because it's a lot of fun. And then the last thing, which is kind of just goofy, but the reason I said there was all this great food and everybody loved the great food, except I never did, is because I have the worst timing. I've been seeing a naturopath and I started a 6-week restricted diet. Just I haven't been feeling great. And so I did like the blood test and they said, well, try eliminating these foods for 6 weeks and then we'll slowly start introducing them and see which ones, you know, messing you up and that kind of thing. And so I'm doing it. But it's a really awkward mix because it's like there's dairy on there, so no dairy. And that didn't surprise me. I've been feeling some things, so okay. Durum wheat came up, which was like, oh, that's inconvenient. And then we said, well, for the 6 weeks, let's go completely gluten-free, even though like things like rye and barley checked out good. And even just wheat was generally okay, you know. But, well, let's go gluten-free for 6 weeks and we'll do it. I said, okay. Let's live on the edge here. Let's embrace the experience. We're going to go gluten-free for 6 weeks. Then they said no rice. And it's like, oh, well, that was sort of my fail safe of on the gluten-free side. I could do all the rice stuff. Nope, no rice. Okay. And then they said no corn. I said, oh, okay. We're really scraping bottom of the barrel here when it comes to things you can make a cracker out of. And so I've been doing a lot of chickpeas and a lot of flax and a lot of buckwheat and that kind of thing. And millet, I've been embracing the millet and the quinoa and it's been okay. But yeah, so I do this right when I've got this, this live event, with the Baking Association of Canada and I can't eat any of the food. And it was all excellent. I would have been just chowing down. So I'm kicking myself a little with the timing, but I only have like 4 weeks left and maybe four to five weeks left and I'm going to be okay. And then when I go back to see my naturopath friend, it's going to be, let's try the wheat first, please. Can we get that back on the menu if that's okay? Because I need my gluten. So no need to panic, but yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Which brings us to the talk today. I just got back from Good Side Pastry on Fort Street, over by the hospital in Victoria, and it's the most amazing place. And I know I say that often because I love bakeries so much, but Good Side, it's the real deal. It is legit. It is the brainchild of two amazing pastry chefs, Haley Landa and Curtis Helm. And Haley and Curtis have been on a long journey to open up Good Side Pastry as a brick and mortar shop. They've been pastry chefs. They have traveled the world. They've worked in restaurants. They've worked on boats. They've worked in Costa Rica using local ingredients. They've done all kinds of stuff that we talk about in this chat. And then they got moved to Victoria and started doing little pop-ups twice a month. Then a little more frequently, trying to sock away some money, making the most impeccable, incredible cream puffs and fine pastries and selling them, you know, on a Sunday afternoon at the public market or upstairs at this hairdresser on Broad Street that happened to have a kitchen at the back. And so they were selling out of there. and socking away the money slowly but surely until they could open up their own brick and mortar place, which they did last month. And they are lined up Thursday through Sunday, line up down the block. They're selling out super fast, and they keep on making more and making more and trying to figure out how they can satisfy the demand. But their product is so good, and their creativity is just there to see for everyone, that it's like they've got a huge following already, and it's spectacular. And so we stood in line, and I think it's going to make it on the tape here, but the last bit of gluten I had before I started this diet was a cream puff from Good Side Pastry. And what a way to go out, let me tell you. If you're going to start a six-week elimination diet, make sure the last thing you have is something from there, because it's stellar. So I got on the bus, went down to the bake shop. We set up the mics right at the bench. They were doing a ton of prep, getting ready for the weekend already, because this is a tiny little shop, and they got to work extremely efficiently to make everything and get it in the fridge and get it ready to proof and bake. They're doing R&D on Mondays. And so I got there, and Haley's going a million miles an hour, and she's mixing stuff, and she's working at the bench, and Curtis is doing a bunch of stuff, and I'm getting everything slowly set up quietly. And then it's like, okay, we have a break. And so boom, hit record. We talked. As soon as I turned the mics off, boom, they were back at it again, because they got stuff to do. And so it was fun. This is a high energy chat. And it was pretty great. So let's get into it. It's Haley Landa and Curtis Helm, the partnership that is Good Side Pastry, the new amazing artisanal pastry shop in Victoria, British Columbia. Here we go. Thanks for doing this, I guess, first off, because I know you're just early days. Like, has it been 3 weeks now for you?
It's been a month of the brick and mortar being open, but it's been about a year and a half, almost 2 years, I guess, actually, of the business of Good Side existing.
Right. Yeah, because, and I don't know, we used to go to your pop-ups.
Yeah, when they were at the Hudson, right?
At Victoria Public Market. And then we went once when you were upstairs at the hairdresser's.
Yeah,
you
know? That was pretty crazy.
Really spot. And, strange transition
and,
spot.
Yeah, yeah. And then we got in under the wire for some cream puffs last weekend.
Yeah.
Yes, nice.
Which I never mentioned. That was the last bit of gluten that I've had since, because I'm doing this funky six-week elimination. Let's eliminate a bunch of stuff.
And yeah. To see what irritates you.
Yeah, I hate it.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's because the one thing that came up on the blood test was wheat. Yeah. And so I said, well, we're going out in style here. So we had croissants and we had
cups and stuff.
But I said, okay, I can do it now. Yeah. So I'm really working on the fumes of the memories of your stuff. So
we've got a pretty mean gluten-free cookie, and sugar and chocolate are still on the table.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But they took rice and corn out too. So it's been brutal.
They're rice and corn free.
Okay. I'll come by.
Yeah. Cause that cookie, we just slow roast hazelnuts and then buzz it up real fine for the flour replacement. So it's actually,
almond flour is the other part of it.
You get that a lot in that cookie where people are like, oh, it's gluten-free. And I feel like gluten-free and vegan products have a bad rap for not being as good.
Yeah.
But I actually think, in the case of that hazelnut cookie, that you're actually getting more flavor impact, because rather than having a flour, which is kind of a neutral binder, you're going to punch it with hazelnuts, which has so much more umami and flavor to it.
And then the nuts caramelize through the bake, so you just get like a whole different depth of flavor with that one.
And then you get the perk of being gluten-free too.
Yeah, for sure. So how did you get your start? Because I guess the first product I've had of yours was just off the charts amazing.
Yeah.
And it's like, it couldn't have been like that on day one. Like, how did you get into this?
Like in general, or the
actual baking and
Curtis and I met in culinary school 12 years ago.
Okay.
So we went to Pica on Granville Island in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And then we continued to work as pastry chefs in Vancouver for a decade after that, and then we moved to Victoria about 2 years ago. So We both did a lot of different pastry chef jobs throughout Vancouver. I started at the Vancouver Convention Center.
Okay.
Did Lazy Gourmet, Purebred, Temper. The biggest one for us was Thomas Haas.
Okay.
We ran his Kitsilano location for a couple of years, and Curtis actually worked for him for like 5.5 years, and he's definitely...
Yeah, he was a pretty amazing mentor for me. I think he really kind of took me under his wing, and he's a little bit old school, but in a good way. He knows how to crack the whip and you know, shape a good chef. And I started, you know, basically doing the dishes and sandwiches and tarts, and slowly made my way up, and then was, you know, on the kind of... in the pastry kitchen, full gas, and then I took over the Kitsilano location, and running that, the back of house there, and that was, the volume was very high. Yeah. He's a very popular, obviously he's a phenomenal chef, pastry chef. And then from there, I went back to the original T1 location and ran his chocolate kitchen and kind of honed my chocolate skills, and then ended up going back, and then Haley and I ended up running the Kits location together for the last stint. Full gas hours, very, very intense. It's family style, so you get those calls at 3 a.m. and it was a lot, and it was beautiful, but also kind of was needing a break after that.
Yeah.
Because it was the classic full gas mentality, lots of hours. Yeah. And then we ended up backpacking and doing pop-ups through Costa Rica.
Yeah, we hooked up with this guy who was putting on these Costa Rican food focused
like a lot projects. Of like jungle, like food that is not accessible through grocery stores, and trying to highlight how beautiful the cuisine can be in Costa Rica. And then that was a really cool project. And
so you went down there?
Yeah,
so we started in the southern part of Mexico, so we stayed in Oaxaca for a while, worked with some really cool people there, and just learned about the local food and got to surf a little bit and backpack around. And then we hooked up with this guy over this app, I guess, who was doing this food project, and he needed two chefs. So we were like, oh, we'll come down and hop on. It was really fun. And we all lived together for a month and a bit and learned about local authentic Costa Rican food and went to all these really cool markets and foraged with a few local people and really helped do these, like, they were like
prefix menus.
Yeah, like 10 course prefix. Like very
and ingredients you just would
crazy
never,
yeah, crazy never dinners did yeah. a bunch of those and
yeah that was pretty cool
then and then came back and I rocked at Purebred for a while and helped them move their production kitchen from Whistler down into Vancouver. And then after that I took over as the regional pastry chef for 49th Parallel Lucky's Donuts.
Oh, okay.
And worked with Aaron, who now runs Butterboom.
Yeah.
And he was another pretty incredible mentor that we got the chance to work.
We work with a lot of amazing people. I think that's what it is for us. Is like it's.
We've just been really lucky. I think right place, right time.
Yeah, and just sort of that. It sounds like you, even sort of straight from school, were sort of okay. I'm the lifestyle is a fit for me.
Yeah.
So I'm just gonna go where the activity is.
Right? Yeah, the activity. Who's doing, you know, the best stuff, really.
Yeah.
That's how we tried to pick it, of who do I want to learn from? Are they doing product that I really feel I stand behind, the way that they're sourcing the ingredients, the way they're running their kitchens, and who they are as chefs. So.
Yeah.
And I think Haley and I were pretty lucky because we had that pretty cliche start where we kind of fell in love at, you know, in the pastry shop and then school. And then growing through that into our career progression, it was easy to bounce ideas off all the time, where we wanted to go, who we wanted to work with, you know, coming home and the talks about the day, what went right, what went wrong, allows for a lot of polishing, outside of the actual workplace.
Yeah. So it's been a team thing from the start.
For sure.
Yeah. Cause I think we knew pretty early on that at some point we were going to have our own thing.
Yeah.
It's amazing how the dream shifts from wanting to have this like big, beautiful patisserie with big staff to now it's shrinking to actually us wanting it to be, I mean, I think our true dream is to just be a me and her.
If we could,
we would do a 300 square foot shop with just the two of us. If it could pay our bills, that's what we would do.
Yeah.
Obviously the economics behind it don't work.
Yeah.
So we obviously had to find a middle ground. That's why we have this little 800 square foot place that we try and maximize the kitchen efficiency. And Yeah. See where it goes from there, and we take it a day at a time. And
yeah. Well, and so how long has it been sort of from school to here then?
In 12 years.
12 years.
I guess almost 13, because I think we went to school in 2010.
Yeah.
So that's quite the adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Very, very incredible journey. Yeah. I think it's always funny because we still get the comment a lot, like, how do you work with your partner all day? Yeah. I'm like, we've been doing it for years and it's always been the goal. It's like, I think we're very, very, very lucky to get that opportunity from Thomas to be able to run a shop together and test out what that was like, which really, I think
because it's for sure not for everybody.
It's for sure not. Yeah.
No,
I think
working with your partner, especially in a kitchen sense, where high pressure, a lot of critique amongst each other, right? And to receive critique is not an easy thing.
Like unfiltered.
Unfiltered critique.
The harshest of, like, there's no
hold
back.
We're ruthless with each other,
so.
Yeah. If I don't make her cry, I didn't do it.
I don't make you cry.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
See, I'm wilting just thinking about it. It's so funny because it's like, I got into this sort of from the corporate world where, you know, you read books and you take entire courses on giving feedback and that kind of a thing. And it's when you have the time to give well-structured feedback, it's a gift. But it's like when you're working at the pace that you guys work with, it's like, just give it, we got to cut to it.
I don't have time.
Yeah.
I do find, like, for both of us, I feel like it has had a very positive effect on our skill set.
Yeah, because I think in the modern era, I think most people, they'll try your product and they're not going to be like, you know, this isn't quite good enough. They're going to be like, it's delicious, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the most, like, I think we get that all the time.
Yeah.
But to have someone who holds you accountable, who knows the standard it should be and be like, this isn't there. Yeah. Go back.
It's
to
still
workshop.
Good, but
it's
like,
good, but it's not.
It's not. It's not what it could be.
And not, and not to be scared to voice those opinions is
well, and that's the sense that I get from your products, right? Like, especially I'll focus on the cream puffs because it is a type of thing that is totally not in my world at all. Like, so every time I have one of yours. Well, two things come to mind all the time. It's first off, just a level of precision that I can only dream of, right? Like, it's like every single one, like, they just look perfect. And then I start thinking about just the thought process you must have gone through to come up with the layers of flavors that's in the thing, right? You know, like, because it's always three things.
Yeah.
But it's three things that work so well together. And then it just looks amazing. And I'm like, okay, you know, because I'm a bread guy, right? And I used to take pride in the fact that all the bread looked the same, but it is a different level of the same. Like, it is a different level of precision, and you know, and I don't know, even the way that you're going to put, you know, the cream on it is like, I'm all thumbs and I'm putting fingerprints and everything, you know, and that kind of thing. And you guys are just like nailing it, and it's I don't know. And even for Victoria, which is such a food city, it's like, it's apart from everything else. Like, it's so cool. It's so cool. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, having said that though, I think consistency in bread is no joke.
No,
because we're multi-component. And obviously outside of like having your mousses and your gelées all being the right consistency all the time, you have a little bit, it's more like cooking where you have a little bit more, you know, a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that. Bread is very simple in its, you know, concept, but it's always the simple things that are the hardest too.
Yeah.
To consistently,
for sure.
Especially
for sure.
Like natural leaveners and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're, you know, when you're going to bang through, you know, 36, 48 loaves and you want to, you know, that's the thing we have in common for speed. Is it sort of like, you know, that block of dough? I was at a bakery the other day, just, you know,
peeking around, and after a while, I'm thinking, you're leaving that dough out too long, guys.
Long. Like, yeah. Like,
you got to get on that. You're talking about it too much.
Stress,
you keep your hands moving. Right? I'm on the customer side of things, and I'm starting to twitch. Right?
Yeah. Right? Exactly. Yeah.
Like, come
it's
on.
Like, well, I think I've been sitting on the bench for like 18 minutes at least. Yeah. All those other 20 loaves that have not been shaped yet are already half proofed.
Yeah, like, we got to get a move on. So yeah. So it's there's something about that. And even when, you know, watching you work at Adam's place, at Working Culture there, when we'd pop in, it was sort of like, oh, okay. It was always fun to see someone that knows what they're doing, you know, and just kind of go, yeah, oh, so cool. Well, and I guess more, it's in my mind because of that baking association thing we were talking about that was yesterday. And sort of, I guess, the lifestyle of the types of work you've been doing the past 13 years and sort of the advantages, an opportunity comes up in Costa Rica and it's like, yeah, we can go for it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so there's sort of that, there's hard work and there's freedom involved, but you're also giving up some things to do that. And I guess, how's that been for you sort of, has there ever been sort of a point you're saying like, what the hell are we doing here? Or are you still going full steam ahead?
Yeah, that's funny you said that, because I mean, obviously I think it's a pretty well-known aspect of our industry that we're overworked and underpaid.
Yeah.
That's everyone knows that. Yeah. And it's definitely more, at least for Haley and I, it's the instant gratification of making a beautiful product that keeps us in the industry. Having said that, after Thomas and after we did a Costa Rica thing, I took a little sideways step. And I started cooking on tugboats.
Okay.
Which is a really weird step for us. But we did that because the pay was there. And we knew that we needed to create a little bundle of cash so that when we were ready for this step, we would have something to step back on.
Yeah.
Because that's just
Which
the reality.
Like, again, goes really into like how long-term the plan to get where we're at now has been.
Yeah. Like, I think we kind of knew.
In the conversation, it's been for so long. And we're like 6 years ago, we're like, okay. One of us has to do a side step that still involves cooking where we can make a little bit more bank to be able to give us some safety.
Yeah. I hear you for sure. And because we were talking earlier about how all the pop-ups that you've been doing for the last year or so, and that is just a little bit at a time putting the nest egg aside to do this.
Yeah. So it's basically I did tugboating to save enough capital to buy a home for us in Victoria. And then we did the pop-ups to save enough capital to open the store, which is really cool.
And the first year and a half of running that, I was at Working Culture.
Yeah, so we were
doing I was working full-time. I then started to do 4 days a week to be able to do this every weekend. It started as every second weekend, and then it progressed from there. That I was still trying to balance. So again, we had like more financial safety along the way.
Yeah.
That then... I think it was last February where I finally was like, okay, I'm burnt out. I gotta fully commit to this.
Yeah, it's a nice edge of like hours work, balanced work lifestyle, sustainability of that, and at some point you just gotta commit, right?
Yeah.
So I think we felt like we had, you know, enough of a flow, enough of a market that Haley could sustain herself off of the pop-ups while still managing to have a little nest egg for this next step, which was really beautiful. I really loved that kind of slow organic. We were very committed to not taking investment and that we wanted it to be a slow growth organic thing, and to have, you know, we have regulars who have been with us from the very beginning that still come to this shop now, which is so cool.
Which is pretty incredible because people like you, for example, like you came to us at Hudson.
Yeah.
Then you came to us at Heartwood. Now you're coming to our brick and mortar. Like, it's been such a long journey that I'm still, I guess, like shocked that we have these people who have like, oh yeah, I used to come to you 2 years ago when you were doing these like bi-weekly pop-ups that still come now every week. Like, it's just such a gratifying feeling to know that we've created a product that brings people coming back so consistently.
Yeah. Well, for sure, because that's the thing that I'm still learning about Victoria as well, is that there's so much new going on here that I always worry sometimes about sort of okay, when the next new things opens up, there's going to be a group of people that are, it's like, oh, okay, we're done with this. This thing is now the old thing. I'm on to the new thing. So it's gratifying to hear that we're not the only ones. They're like, yeah, you know, we'll stick with the good stuff over the long term, right?
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's what Victoria is actually very good for, is they're very, I think the support for small businesses is definitely there. We have a lot of people coming in and wanting to support the little guy, and especially in like the economical climate, yeah. It's still cool that it's there and yeah. The presence is there.
Which was always the draw for us from leaving Vancouver and coming to Victoria, yeah. Is like having worked in kind of all facets of the Vancouver food scene in terms of working for independent owners and working for corporate companies. Yeah. It was just looking like I wanted something where I felt like I had more connection with the community, and I just started to like lose hope a little bit that was going to happen in Vancouver. Like, do I think that's true? Probably not. I think we could still have like,
right.
No, I think Victoria was just better for it. It is better for it. We have no regrets. It's been an amazing journey here, and we love the people, and the community reception has been phenomenal.
Was it, moving here, was it sort of, as was the point of coming here, that yeah, I think this is where we're going to be able to open our place.
Yeah,
and not from like a I think the business makes more sense here. Yeah. It was more like I wanted to be in a place where I know the faces that walk in the door, have a genuine connection with our customers.
Yeah,
like we said, which goes back to the regulars been with us for 2 years. It was super important for us that it was community based, and Vancouver just doesn't quite have that because you have to turn over so much volume, your rent's higher, your food costs is high. There's just like a whole bunch of things that make it difficult to do that there. And Victoria's just
perfect. And it's hard to compete with these shops that take on
million dollar
investments,
yeah.
And are able to just open up these really, really bougie, high end places, which granted can be very incredible, but it just was never what appealed to Curtis and I.
Yeah, sure. So like Curtis, you were describing it when you gave me a tour around of the place. What really impressed me was you were super serious about, we're just going to open with, you know, what's the sort of the smallest I can do to get open.
Yeah.
And then you're already talking about, okay, I can see how I can expand here and I can expand there. Just maybe talk a little bit about the experience of opening this place now and going from the pop-up. So what did it take to build this place out?
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
or I guess maybe first, how hard was it to find the place to say, okay, this is the location for us?
That was probably the trickier part of anything, because there's very little like what we have. This is like the mid ground of space.
Yeah.
It's either 1500, 2000 square feet or like 400 square feet, no kitchen,
yeah.
Like just way too small. So we got really lucky because this place wasn't even listed on the market. I actually went, Curtis was on the boat, and I went for a viewing of another place that was much larger, needed a lot of work put into it, was sort of in a similar area, but it was just like way out of our price range.
Okay.
And the woman who was doing the tour with me was like, did you see 1805 Fort Street? And I was like, no, I also didn't see that listed anywhere. And she's like, well, it's actually not listed yet. The business that was in there kind of closed up shop and just left, so it hasn't hit the market yet.
Right.
But I can get you a viewing tomorrow if you want to see it, because I know the guy who will be listing
Beautiful.
It. So I was like, okay. I came the next day. We did the walkthrough. It was nasty.
Yeah.
But I could see the potential, and so could she, because I described to her kind of exactly what we were looking for. The guy who was showing us left, and she was like, I think this is the one. And I was like, I think so too. How do we get it? And then it was like a little bit weird in the beginning because, can you talk about that? They like...
Yeah, there was just some things on the back end that were a little bit made... It was an awkward transition,
right?
With the previous owners, all good.
Yeah.
And Yeah, so I think we knew we needed a space around the 800 square foot range. We kind of knew what our price range per square foot wanted to be. Again, going back to that whole thing of we've run the big staffs. We didn't want to have a big staff.
Right.
We really wanted to keep it the overhead as low as possible so that we could maintain, which ended up being so far maybe an oversight because we were thinking maybe we'll do a certain volume. But now our volume's exploded and now we're like
tripled what we thought initially we would be.
That's going to be our number one problem to deal with, you know, supplying the demand.
For reference, the issue with the space currently is that we can't get any more power.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're running
out. For anyone who's opening a shop listening to this, power, power, power.
Yeah.
Go for three phase.
Is the number one thing.
Do you have three phase?
No, we're running on 100-amp panel.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So we do a lot of turning things on and off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We are getting it upgraded next week to 125 amps, but that is
just to give us enough
the max of what we're going to be able to get in the building. They're not going to upgrade it to three phase.
It just costs too much money.
The panel's already being used, like 95% of the panel's already being used by the time we moved in here. So it is what it is. But when people are like, the solution to making more is just hire more staff. And I'm like, no.
No, it isn't.
The solution would be another double door fridge and freezer or a walk-in, none of which are even going to ever be on the table due to the electrical issue in the space. So. Yeah. It's kind of been a game of chess, trying to move stuff around to be like, okay, well, can we incorporate a chocolate program because the refrigeration used for that is far less.
I think that's the beauty of coming with a pretty versatile skill set is the restrictions of the space we just work around.
Yep.
It's a constraint.
But you're right. And power comes up a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And especially in the three phase thing.
Especially with all the bigger equipment, as you're going up in equipment sizes, now all of a sudden you're drawing wattage that a single phase just blow breaker.
But so you had mentioned though that you know your volumes tripled in the early days here from your projections, though, and they always used to say to me, "Oh, that's a good problem to have," and it's like, "Yeah, okay, but still, like at the levels that you're working, your plans." Good though, like you're kind of going to be on track.
So the pros are we're in the black immediately.
Yeah,
and after the first month, we made all our money back.
Yeah.
Of the investment, which is
that's nice.
Which is nice.
Yeah,
and it's just beautiful to feel recognized that we make a product that people like and come back for and will line up for. With that, there comes expectation that you now have to deliver, because people are going to wait in line up for 40 minutes. Your product better be pretty good.
Yeah.
And then there becomes this, sweet spot of, it doesn't matter how good your product is. Eventually people won't wait in line up for longer. Right.
Sure.
So now it goes back to the original thing of we only have one POS system interface. How fast can you still in, which goes against what we originally wanted, which was a really solid customer interaction. I want to know your name, where you're from, what you do. I want to have that deeper level of connection, but you now have to deal with 100 people in line.
Yeah.
You can't just, shoot gab for 10 minutes with a customer, right?
Yeah.
But it is what it is.
Yeah. No, I gotcha. And like we used to tell our staff, right? It's like, we're lined up and the holidays are crazy or whatever. But it's like, you can make good eye contact. For right now, it's the person in front of me and we're going to make sure that they're happy and then we'll move on.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Which is absolutely the mindset we're in.
And genuine too. It's genuine. Yeah. Like I want every person to walk in the door to feel like, you know, if they've had a crappy day and they're just needing a little solace, come on in. You know, our ventilation isn't great, so you got a big waft of butter when you come in, and then you can snag yourself a treat and have that treat live up to expectation is important for us.
Okay. Well, and so then we've kind of danced around it, and I should let you do this in your own words, but it's so. You know, we hit summertime.
Yeah.
what's good side pastry? What's the bakery in your imaginations? What's the thing that you're really working towards? How would you describe it to folks? Like for the folks that are going to be coming off that cruise ship, and somebody told them come out to Fort Street.
Honestly, I'll be pretty surprised if we get any of them. I feel like the cruise ship people like to stay downtown.
And that's okay.
That's okay, because really the focus, which I hope that's okay to say, the focus is the local people.
Yeah.
The focus for me is not the one-time cruise ship person. That's amazing if they come here, but I want to be impactful with the people in our community more so than anything, right?
Yeah, I think our like we said, I think our main points we always want to hit are, in some ways, this business model doesn't make a lot of sense, because it's for us, it comes more from a craftsmanship and an artist expression.
Yeah.
For us, we will change our menu constantly.
Yeah.
And we get people being like, well,
why would you change this item?
I love this item. And it's, which might sound a little bit selfish, but it's because Haley and I, this is our life. We're here 6 days a week, 18-hour days. We do it because we love it, full stop. And we do it because it's how we express ourselves.
It's the artistic expression, really.
And it's always the chasing of being better and becoming better at our craft.
But I think that's the thing. And that's the image that I have of you two is that real craftsperson. I always think of folks like you, like the potter that is not just going to make the same cup every single time. This is not mass production of anything.
Yes.
And so, but it's like when I'm standing in line, it's very much what have you two cooked up this time? Like, Cindy looks on Instagram and she has an idea of, this is what I'm thinking of today. I hope they still have the whatever. And I'm just like, what's got chocolate in it? And what did they think of today? I'm happy, right?
Yeah. And it's not for everybody. And that's, customer experience is not for everybody. Some people are really wanting to know that they like this specific product.
And it's
they
always
it going to
be there.
And a bakery should have the regular stuff.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a different place here.
And I think that's something that people aren't quite used to yet. And that's okay. I can fully understand if that's a deterrent for people where they're like, well, I love the cowboy twist and it's not going to be on the menu next month, so I'm not going to go.
Yeah.
I can understand that, but for us, I'm like, I've worked in so many shops, Chris worked in so many shops where it is always the same menu, and it's just, I need the artistic expression and the creative freedom to change it up. Yeah. It's just...
Yeah, from a business sense, it doesn't make sense, because when you do the same items every day, you're able to... You use the skill, you can make your recipes bigger and bigger, the flow, you can cut things down because you know exactly what it is.
Your supplies are easier to order because you're getting the same stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Every day our supplies are changing, and that's part of the battle, especially when you're going as local and sustainable as possible. There's reasons why people use like GFS and Cisco.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Nothing against that at all. But I think it was part of, we wanted to represent the little guys. They've got, we have a dude who has a greenhouse in his backyard and he just sources the weirdest fruits and seeds. And
the best edible flowers are only in small amounts, really interesting colors.
And he'll have them 1 week and he'll never have them again.
Yeah.
And if you were to have the same menu all the time, you can't do that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But there are people that's right up their alley.
Yeah.
What's in store today? And let's see what Curtis and Haley do with this.
Which is the beautiful thing, I think. Yeah. And that's why we were super, I mean, I almost cried the first week, because it was just, we were having these lineups down the block and it was like, wow, there are people out there who are, still eager to expand their taste buds and see what else is out there and try something new.
Yeah.
And because we were a little bit worried, Victorious is, has a lot of how do I say that? I think with what COVID came through and the having to meet the market and create things that, you know, like a scone, you know a scone's going to sell, right? You know a classic chocolate chip cookie is going to sell. So now you have to make your menu to cater to the market because you're so worried about keeping the doors open. For us to go the other way and do things that we don't know if people are going to like, but we like, was a little bit scary to do, especially when...
Definitely a bit of a risk.
Especially when you have your house tied to it, you know, like, you know, the risk is high, right? Yeah. So, yeah. So, but we just wanted to have something new and different and be able to be in a space where we continue to grow as chefs ourselves and not bottleneck
and
ourselves.
And not, be like, I do these things good. Let's just only do these things because I know I can do them good consistently. I think the desire to continue, even when working for yourself, to continue to grow the skill set is definitely a big focus for both of us still.
And challenging, like, super challenging, because you're always in the state of unknown.
Sure.
Right? You're always in the uncomfortable spot of when you do like R&D and testing, which is this like thing that all chefs want to do, but you never seem to have time. Mm-hmm. We live on that knife's edge every day, really, because we're constantly, you know, I'll pull a little bit aside to try something new and do I like it? Okay, now we have to go from doing 10 to, you know, 200. And then you have to deal with the little hiccups that come with upscaling a recipe that has not been scaled up.
Right. Yeah. There's a curve. Well, then you're nailing it though.
Oh.
and this is, I think this pastry shop as artist studio is not a bad thing, you know, like that's great. And I got to say, like, a big props to you two for being able to build this out as quickly as you did.
60 days
on the budget that you had, like, because like I know what it's like. Like ours was bigger and we spent more, but we were doing it on the shoestring too.
Yeah.
And we were open, like, I think we got the keys on Remembrance Day and we were open January 18th kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And you just go and, you know, we opened Christmas gifts and then got down and painted, right?
Because
you got it, right? And that's the way, but I have to say, like, the experiences that you've had, the knowledge that you've built up to get to this point is gonna hold you in good stead, right? Like, you know, you've got a lot of experience to lean back on when things get weird, you know, so good for you.
I like to think so.
Yeah. I think that's kind of like the only reason why we can sleep at night.
Yeah.
Because we know that, like, if things really went sideways, we've seen it. Like, we've lived it, right? We've lived it with other shops. So we know, okay, there are some recourse to try and get back on your feet.
But even the little things, like you were saying, you know, about maybe the cream didn't come properly today or whatever. It's like, yeah, okay. Like, it happens. We'll fix it. You know,
that's what a kitchen like, is. It's just putting out fires constantly.
Having a massive meltdown and then being like broken for the rest of the day isn't getting you farther ahead at all. It's not helping anyone with anything. All you can do is maybe complain about it for a few minutes. Be like, we got really effed on that. Okay, how can we fix it? Let's go. We can go to the store. We can get that. We can use this. It's okay. We can sub this flavor for this flavor today. It's all good.
It's living that state of problem solving. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's no point in continuing to dwell on it because it's already happened.
Yeah.
Move on. Let's go. We can fix it. It's fine.
And the pressure to deliver is always there, right?
Right.
Like, at the end of the day, you're going to open your doors. Customer's going to be there. So you got to do it somehow. You got to solve it somehow.
I think we're always like, I'm like, everything could go wrong. We're like, well, shop didn't burn down.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah, that's right.
Every day. Shop's not
burned down. Fortunately today, that piece of equipment didn't break. Shop didn't burn down. Water pumps didn't explode. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what can we do?
Well, and especially here in Victoria where there's no insulation in the city. It's like, you know,
it gets cold. It's like killed in the shop.
Well, and so put a temperature and an alarm thing on your electrical panel because that'll be the... that'll be the one. It's to run two things at once and cool. Well, I'll let you, thanks for taking the time today. Like, I know you guys are just going hard and I thought I was kind of pushing my luck, even asking for a chat.
But no way.
I'm grateful for the time and I'm just so happy with what you guys are doing. And good luck with everything.
Thank you.
I don't think luck is in the equation for you two,
luck is always in the equation.
She's a cheeky mistress.
Right on.
As much of her as you can get.
Yeah, I don't think any business survives without luck. So.
Okay. Good talk. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you both.
Well, that was fun. It was nice to do one face-to-face and live, just standing around the bench again. It was really good. I remembered how to use the gear, so the recording worked. If you're listening to this, the recording worked. Anyways, so that's a good sign. So yeah, it was a really good chat. I was very grateful for them to give up some time to share their story. I gotta say, to make the commitment to get into food service and to work as hard as they have worked over the last 12 years, just to get to the point where you're going to open up your own place and work even harder, like that's some dedication. And they've got the dedication. You're going to have to check them out on Instagram or head down to the place if you're on the island, because that dedication is paying off with some truly amazing baking. And they've got the support of the community right now. And I hope that lasts indefinitely, because they are making the good stuff in every facet of that phrase. So it was great to talk to Curtis and to Haley. So cool that that they are part of the baking community here on Vancouver Island, and part of this web of bakers and pastry chefs and amazing food folk all around the world that I'm so privileged to get to talk to on this show. So I hope you enjoyed the show this week. If you've got ideas, if you have feedback, if there's something you want to share, reach out. I'm always available via email at mark@riseuppod.com. Riseuppod.com is also the place where there's all 182 episodes of this podcast there for you to listen. I got an email from a fellow this week that said he's listened to every single one and he finally got to the last one and wanted to reach out and say hi. It was great to hear. I love to hear from folks. So reach out via email. Would love to hear from you. I'm not as on Instagram as much as I have been in the past, but email will always work. Until next time, when we're back with another amazing baker to hear their story, work hard, bake lots, keep making the good stuff. Happy baking. Bye-bye.